Andrew Talks to Chefs is an independent podcast. For current and past episodes, Andrew's blog, contact information, and more, please visit andrewtalkstochefs.com. To support us, please visit patreon.com/andrewtalkstochefs. Enjoy the show.
I'm Massimo Bottura.
This is Amanda Cohen.
This is David Kinch.
This is Mike Anthony.
This is Huni Kim.
This is Amanda Freitag.
This is Richard Blaze.
This is Paul Kahn.
This is Curtis Stein.
This is Stephen Harris.
This is Missy Robbins.
And you're listening to Andrew Talks to Chefs.
First of all, we need to stop overthinking it, because I think we've done a lot of that, and that's what a lot of these options are for. Second, it's just like, I'm going to relate it back to you cooking savory food and how you can't wing it, and how your pause with baking is because you don't feel like it's so intuitive the way this savory cooking is. But if you get to know your pantry ingredients, and if you build a pantry that you know the characteristics and the personalities of everything in your pantry, baking does become really intuitive, and you know you can throw together a pie very easily with whatever you got at the farmer's market without even thinking about it, the way that you would cook, you know, roasted chicken. That to me is the whole point.
That is Chef Kelly Fields of Willigene Restaurant and author of the new book, The Good Book of Southern Baking. She is our guest on today's episode of Andrew Talks to Chefs. It's gonna take a prolonged arrangement of the senses to make some sense. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Andrew Talks to Chefs. I am your host, Andrew Friedman, and you are not imagining things. We just posted a new show yesterday featuring Chef Mark Ladner, and we're back just one day later with another new episode. Why? Well, one reason is that, I have to be honest, I miss our daily interactions that I came to love during our nightly special reports in the early days of the lockdown. And the other reason is that I've heard from quite a few listeners, especially chefs and cooks out there, that this show has been a bit of a lifeline to the industry during this brutal time. So I'm going to try to do something for me and for you out there and drop more shows more frequently. I can't promise that they will be daily, but I am hoping to approach something like that. I will do my best. We'll all see how that goes. If you are noticing a little extra ambient sound today, that is because I am working in my backyard. Now that Labor Day is in the rearview mirror and fall and winter are in sight on the horizon line, I want to get as much outdoor time as possible before things force us all back indoors here in the Northeast. So you might hear barking dogs, lawnmowers, shrieking children from neighboring yards, passing cars from the other side of my house before we're done here today, but I'm not going back indoors until I absolutely have to. So my guest today is the amazing Kelly Fields. Kelly did a deep dive episode with us back on episode 83 just last year. The link to that interview is on the episode page for this show at andrewtalkstochefs.com and also on the Apple podcast listing for today's show. She's back today to talk about her new cookbook, her first cookbook, which is entitled The Good Book of Southern Baking, a revival of biscuits, cakes, and cornbread. It's a beautiful book. I happen to love it, and you'll hear more about this in the interview. Generally like baking or books about baking, but this is one that I'm quite fond of, and it was written by Kelly in collaboration with Kate Headings, who is a colleague of mine here in New York. I think the book captures a lot of what makes Kelly special. We get into all the particulars in the interview. The only thing we don't say overtly is that the book is just out. It is available, and you can purchase it online or in stores. And I want to make that clear. I think if you do like to bake, or even if you are intrigued by baking, or maybe if, like me, you're a little bit of a baking phobe, you might check it out. Well, you'll hear why. I get to all that as Kelly and I converse. So with that, let me get right to it. Here is my conversation with Kelly Fields. Here you go. Kelly, congratulations on the book. It's a beautiful book. It's a very readable book. Before we talk about the particulars of it, can you just say a little about how long it took you from inception to this moment of publication that we're about to hit?
It's been about 2.5 years from start to now. So I feel like we're real into it now.
And did it take any turns along the way? Like a lot of times, you know, people write a book proposal and by the time the book comes out, it's kind of morphed into something a little bit different or very different. And sometimes it's exactly the book they thought they were going to write when they kind of took the first step. Was there any kind of a curve like that with yours, or was it pretty much exactly what you had in mind all along?
I think it's a lot simpler than what I originally thought about. I mean, the original idea was to take the notebooks that I've had for 20 years and written all my recipes in and sort of just share it with the world. And then sort of strip it away, I realized how important it was to me to make baking fun and approachable and take away all the intimidating parts that people think about baking and just make it something people want to bake out of.
For what it's worth, and I'm not, you know, I always feel like I have to say this, but I am not just saying this. I'm not really a baker. In my house, my wife Caitlin and I have a very strict demarcation line. I do most of the savory cooking. Certainly if we have people over, that's my jam. And Kate's like the home pastry chef. And I've always felt a little bit of a, I guess, an antipathy toward the precision of baking, toward all the measuring, toward, at least for me, the inability to just kind of spontaneously do what, you know, on my mind. I feel like baking is very much based on formulas and measurements and specificity, right? But I have to tell you, reading this book made me want to bake. And part of it was, and you go into all this, right? You have a very personal, very detailed biographical introduction, as a lot of chefs do when they do their books. And you talk about, you know, you spend some time, and I guess I don't really like this term anymore because I feel like the lines are blurred in so many ways, but you spent some time in what I guess we would probably call fine dining kitchens, fairly serious restaurants. And, you know, you talk about how that training helped shape you. And I feel like, and please tell me if I'm wrong about this, but, you know, throughout the book, as I was reading your recipes, there was this dotted line for me from the specificity of your ingredients. And I don't mean the amounts. I mean, for example, you have a pancake recipe and there's more than one type of flour in your pancake recipe. Now that is very specific. You know, we did a long interview about 2 years ago now, I guess, where, you know, and you talk about in the book, you spent like 2 years or 2.5 years developing your chocolate chip cookie, you know, and I saw that pancake recipe and I thought, wow, this is someone who's really thought about how to make the ultimate pancake. And but I just wonder if you could speak to this aspect of it, because it does seem to me like you have tinkered with a lot of things in order to achieve a very specific effect that you had in your mind.
Well, first, I just really love pancakes. And it's really, it's a whole world, right? Pancakes are amazing. They're like cookies. Like there's so many ways to do it and so many different outcomes. And you know, the pancakes as well as the rest of the book is what I think is my most favorite version of that thing. And so you get this light, airy, really tender and delicate pancake from the recipe. But at the same time, like I talk about in the beginning of the book, if you don't have cake flour, that's okay. Just use AP. It's going to be a little bit different. But the recipe is just a guideline of like how to get, by my definition, the most perfect pancake, but also like do whatever you want with it. At the same time, it's going to be delicious.
Yeah. And you are very good at, you give a lot of, you know, what's mine is yours, the sort of tips throughout the book, which gives the kind of flexibility you're talking about. You also give, and this was very striking to me because, you know, as someone who's collaborated on a lot of cookbooks, you know, the question always comes up, you know, does the world need another X, right? And like, for example, I've worked on a lot of books with Italian chefs and Italian Americans who want to do an Italian cookbook. And, you know, for years it was, do we need another Tuscan book? You know, now here you come with this book. And, you know, a lot of the recipes in this book, some of the recipes are very unique to you by name, right? But then there is like, you know, you have your banana bread recipe. There's your famous chocolate chip cookie. There's the pancake. There's a lot of what we would call basics, but they're done, you know, to your sensibility specifics, right? And I'm just wondering, was that a tough leap for you to take to include so many of those? Because I have to tell you, I kind of love it. Like I could, not having cooked any of these, I was like, and it seems to me, and you're probably too modest to say this out loud, but it seems to me like, you know, part of the offer of this book is this might become your house pancake recipe and your house chocolate chip cookie and your house banana bread, you know, things that a lot of people turn to, like, you know, these kind of all-purpose classics like Joy of Cooking or, you know, or the Gourmet Cookbook, you know, and those are all fine. But these really have been put through the Kelly Field, you know, ringer to get, you know, your style on them.
Right. And, you know, everything has, you know, its starting point and the diving board, which it jumps off of. And a lot of those are the Joy of Cooking recipes or the Julia Child recipes. Like, that's the stuff I was baking when I started baking and started getting interested in food. So, you know, that's where it all started. And then how do I make it mine the way that, like, I really love to enjoy it? And, you know, like the banana bread recipe started with my mom's because she made it every weekend and it was wonderful. And just adapted, you know, the 20 years of baking, like, what's going to make this taste even better or last longer or be more moist or really show off the banana flavor. You know, that's just sort of the evolution of those recipes, is like how to make it taste more like what it sounds like. That's sort of my approach.
Well, that's a perfect segue, because I wanted to ask you, you have a little section up front about pantry items or, you know, basics, things that you're going to need to buy a lot of if you do a lot of baking. You know, one of the things you said, which it's so fundamental, but you just kind of echoed it in that comment you made about things sounding like, you know, I forget the exact phrasing you said, but what they're called. You know, like when you talk about butter, you say, you know, simply put, high quality butter is going to have that wonderful flavor of butter, right? Now, that sounds like such an obvious thing to say. I don't know that I've ever read exactly that sentence before. I'd love for you to just speak to the importance, even in baking, right? Because there are all these things that we, you know, 20, 30 years ago weren't as common. You know, there's more choice in your basic flour today. Cornmeal, my God, cornmeal, forget it. Can you talk about how you see this topic in 2020 as it relates to home cooks and baking? You know, sort of how one should go about thinking about their pantry and their essentials?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, we need to stop overthinking it, because I think we've done a lot of that, and that's what a lot of these options are for. Second, it's just like, I'm going to relate it back to you cooking savory food and how you can't wing it, and how your pause with baking is because you don't feel like it's so intuitive the way that savory cooking is. But if you get to know your pantry ingredients and you take the time and do, like, I suggest doing a butter tasting, like get a bunch of different kind of butters and just taste the butter side by side, because you don't know until you try how different butter tastes, right? And that it tastes different at different times of the year, and, you know, salt versus unsalted and all, like, you get to really, like, learn butter the way that you learn, like, how to cook a steak on the grill. Like, that's intuitive to you now. And if you build a pantry that you know the characteristics and the personalities of everything in your pantry, baking does become really intuitive. And you know you can throw together a pie very easily with whatever you got at the farmer's market without even thinking about it, the way that you would cook, you know, roasted chicken. And, like, that to me is the whole point. You know what I mean?
I do. So are you very politely taking exception to what I said before?
I'm not taking exception, because I think, you know, there are certain things in pastry that are exact and are very delicate to measurement.
Inflexible.
Yeah, exactly. Inflexible. I think the beauty of Southern baking in particular is that it is intuitive and it is humble and it is whatever you have around. And so just like you learn how to make a couple of really good sauces and savory cooking, and you can kind of rescue any meal with a good sauce. Like, you learn a pie dough, you learn a basic cake recipe, like all that. And then you add to it whatever you have, right? So it becomes as natural as savory cooking, in my opinion. I also, like, my whole career is flip-flop. So I did pastry for so long, and I've just in the last, like, 6 years started savory cooking professionally. So it feels like really common sense to me, and, you know, that might be unfair to everyone.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've had a number of chefs tell me that, I mean, you would be an extreme example, right? But a lot of chefs who, you know, if you want to draw that demarcation line between savory and sweet, you know, a lot of chefs have told me that they think it should be almost mandatory for someone who, even if they have no desire to do pastry in their career, to spend 6 months or spend a year in a pastry department somewhere because of all of this, because it does teach you that discipline and then teaches you how to work within that discipline and still kind of, you know, transmit your personality to the food.
And I also agree that anybody who wants to specifically do pastry should also work savory for at least 6 months. All you're doing is making yourself a better cook when you do those things, regardless of what you end up doing.
Well, you are the one, you did say one of my favorite lines ever on this podcast, which was plate it like a salad.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's the story of my life right there.
Related to desserts.
Yep.
Can you tell me about this title? I mean, it has such a throwback sound to it. The Good Book of Southern Baking. That's great. A revival of biscuits, cakes, and cornbread. Can you talk to me about that word revival and what it's doing in there, what it means to you?
What it means to me is ultimately, you know, I grew up in the South as a pastry chef in the South that kind of was lucky enough to work my way to a point where I was able to travel a lot and see the world and also learn the stereotypes that professionals and non-professionals have towards Southern baking and Southern desserts of being these like stationary, non-evolving, oversized, oversweet productions, right?
Right. Crisco laden.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And none of that is true. Like, we celebrate what we have around us as much as any other region in the world. And for me, it was, you know, part of this book and part of the reason I wrote it was to present a canon of baking while shedding those stereotypes and saying, look, we're not just what you think we are. And it's not cliche and it's not dumb food, for lack of a better term. You know, I've had people across the world tell me that Southern baking sounds dumb, or it's not serious, or it's not technically driven, or all of the qualifiers people sort of put on their own profession. Does that make sense?
It totally does. I'll tell you in a second.
So for me, it's a lot of like bringing it back to the forefront as exactly what it is, which is a evolving, humble, simple, yet incredibly delicious way of baking.
A lot of what you just said ties into a question I had for you, which is, I mean, I grew up in South Florida, right? Which is geographically in the South. It's not really the South the way most people think of the South, although you're only a couple hours from a lot of areas that are. And everything you just said resonates with me, especially, you know, when you say it has, you know, this kind of, you know, it's kind of has a disrespectful reputation in a lot of other regions. But, you know, when you say people celebrate ingredients the way they do anywhere else, I mean, I don't know anywhere, certainly places that probably celebrate it equally, but I don't know anywhere where, you know, the season we're in right now, the fruits of this season are more looked forward to, celebrated, incorporated into especially baking, than they are in the area where I grew up. I mean, I really don't. You know, I had a key lime tree in my backyard. You know, I mean, that was a big deal for us when we could start doing key lime pie and all this kind of thing. But you know, what I do wonder is, I have to say, even having said what I just said, you know, I look at some of the ingredients like you talk about Valrhona chocolate, right? At one point, which I love, and I should probably say they've advertised with us this year, so I should probably say that in full disclosure. But you know, I think for some people, seeing, you know, a chef, you know, a James Beard award-winning chef, you know, a chef of your kind of stature doing a book of Southern desserts and then to call out Valrhona chocolate, right? And I think for some people that might seem kind of incongruously fancy, right, for Southern baking, you know. But your point is that it's not, and I totally agree with you. But do you ever get that kind of response from people? Are they surprised to see when you call for, you know, a high quality butter, or when you call for something like a Valrhona chocolate? Do you get sort of quizzical looks, or do people express surprise, or do you get the opposite of that? Do people think, wow, it's great that you treat these recipes, you know, recipes in this style with this level of thoughtfulness and seriousness?
I'll be honest, I'm not real sure what the reaction is. I think I'll learn a lot more about that as this book is published and comes out.
So you haven't talked about that very much?
No, not really. I mean, generally my rule is always start with the best quality products and your outcome will be of the best quality. And that is not exclusive to, just fruit or butter, but also chocolate. And if you can find a chocolate that you really enjoy that is really consistent, if you find a chocolate that's really consistent in the way that it works with your recipes and you love it personally, that's what you should use. I personally love Valrhona, so that's what I use.
Yeah. I mean, it's always been interesting to me. I grew up with a Cuban stepmother, right? So I had a lot of really good Cuban food, home cooking growing up. And, you know, when I started trying to do some of that cooking myself, I did realize that sometimes I was using ingredients that I don't think she probably ever would have used, you know, just because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the way she was raised cooking. But I did sometimes find that pulling in something that was kind of outside of, you know, not on her radar, you know, a brand or a whatever, you know, a brand of something or a homemade stock, you know, it just made it better. I mean, it just made it better.
But sometimes it makes it worse.
Sometimes it takes it away from, you lose the character that you're looking for.
Yep.
And I've always struggled with how to say that without sound like I'm dissing the food I'm talking about, but I'm actually loving the food I'm talking about, you know. Most great Cuban food that I've had is a little greasy.
Right.
It just is, you know, just a touch. If you make it, clean, you know, if you
dirty.
Lose the funk, it doesn't quite taste like what you got at that restaurant on 8th Street in Miami. It just doesn't. And yeah, I appreciate you saying that because I feel like you made it a little safer for me to say it. I never know how to say it without feeling like I'm disrespecting it, but I'm actually not. I'm just saying, sometimes that's part of the package.
Yeah. I mean, my thought is like pimento cheese, and like anytime you try to make pimento cheese better by getting fancy ingredients,
yeah,
it never works out.
Yeah.
Just make pimento cheese the way your mom did. Everything's
yeah,
fine.
Right. Exactly. Thank you. Perfect. So Kelly, you strike me as someone, you know, there's chefs. I feel like there's not a lot of middle ground on this. I think there's chefs who cook at home and chefs who don't. Do you strike me as one who does, do you?
I didn't until quarantine, and now I have taught myself how to cook at home in the last 6 months.
Taught yourself to cook at home, you mean in terms of scaling it down, learning how to really drive your oven the way you know how to use a professional one, all that kind of stuff.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, when I cooked at home before this, I was always cooking for a gathering of people. Like, I never just cooked for myself. I'd invite friends over and, you know, I'd cook the way that I cook in the restaurant. And now in the past 6 months with everything that's changed, I have learned how, well, I cook for two because if I'm cooking, I always cook my dog, whatever I'm fixing most of the time. So he's become very spoiled, very spoiled.
What are some of your personal favorite? I know it's like everyone always says it's like asking me to pick my favorite kid or whatever, but what are the things you knew, like when you decided to do a cookbook, they were going to be in this book? Like the things that you think either really kind of capture what you're all about as a cook, or just, you know, I think the word sentimental might even be in the press release they sent me, but, or that for sentimental reasons, you know, you do have, and this is a thing that I'm, you know, I'm against the people who have an issue with long head notes or long, you know, notes on recipes on the internet. I love long head notes. I want the story, you know, I want to know where it fits into the person's life. You give a lot of that in this book, which I love. So either for personal reasons or just because you think they're a great distillation of what you do.
I think one of my most favorite recipes in the book is my mom's peach and blackberry cobbler. Because to me, it's like a perfect dessert and the recipe is so easy. It's almost unbelievable. So for me, it's like, this is how easy good food is. Like, it's equal parts sugar, milk, and flour, and that's it. And it's perfection.
I'm sorry if this was in the head note. I'm not remember. Is that basically her recipe as she did it?
Yeah, she still does it. She made it this weekend. She sent me a picture of it. So she still makes it all the time.
So that would be an example of one where you didn't need to get all fancy professional chefy with it.
Yeah. And I've tried, and I actually put my mom's recipe next to my recipe. And still to this day, even published in the book, my mom's recipe beats mine every time.
That's so interesting. Just because of whatever.
And it's so.
Just because of the vibe she has with that, how she makes it on the day. She has that intuition for it.
She really does. It's pretty amazing.
Give me one or two more. Just things that you, I mean, the chocolate chip cookie obviously is, that's gold for everybody.
I hope so. Everybody's been asking for it. So there it is. I love my Aunt Jean's lemon chiffon pie with the saltine cracker crust.
And what about that speaks to you?
Well, it's just like memories of going to her house. She's in Knoxville, Tennessee, and going to her house. And every time I've been to her house in my entire life, that pie has been part of the visit. And my Aunt Jean and my Uncle Henry are just two of my most favorite people I've ever met in my life. So it's really special to me, but it's also that blend of learning to embrace the sort of highbrow, lowbrow that is who I am, really, with the saltine crust. And I came to that with the sitting at Cook's Corner in Raleigh, North Carolina, with Bill, when Bill Smith was a chef there, and he fed me that pie, that same kind of pie with that saltine crust, and literally just blew my mind with it.
You got one more for me?
Yeah, warm chocolate pudding.
Mm.
My mom, we never had the like Jell-O instant pudding. She would always cook pudding on the stove. Me and my siblings would literally fight over who got to like lick the pot clean. And we would eat it hot, and sometimes we'd stir like a cup of peanut butter into it at the end, so it'd be chocolate peanut butter. And pudding warm is a revelation to me. Like, I don't understand how people eat cold pudding when you can't in fact eat it warm.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, I love it. Every time it's made here at the restaurant, I have to get a spoon of it. Like, I cannot resist it.
Can you talk to me about how and where the book was photographed? I love the pictures in this book. I mean, they're very, very, very. I mean, first of all, there's a fair number of pictures of you. I mean, it's not like an ego trip. It's not to that degree. But we do get to kind of see you in your natural habitat. But there's also just the food shots, some of the, you know, the storefronts and the buildings. It's got a real great feeling to it. Can you just speak to me about that process?
Sure. So I work with Oriana Corinne out of L.A., and they came over to New Orleans, and we shot between my house and another house, and just sort of wandered around New Orleans and took pictures also. And our goal was to sort of do like a real sort of gritty version of the food, where it's not, again, part of the stereotype. I feel like a lot of the visuals of Southern baking are the cake on the cake stand with all the flowers and like gingham napkins and all that stuff. And we were just trying to do real food. Like, everything that we shot is like, was cooked straight from the recipe, and it was all real food. 'Cause you know, on a lot of sets, not everything is edible that's shot. And it was very important to me that we were shooting food we could eat.
Yeah, and you do this thing that I love where you do see, like, sometimes you'll see something partially, you know, like a tray of cupcakes with like one of the like an empty foil, you know, or you know, a knife there, you know, taking a slice out of something, whatever the culinary equivalent of lived in is, like, it's got that,
right,
it's
right.
Got that vibe, which is a personal, I love that. I absolutely love that in cookbooks, because it's, like you said, it's just real.
Oriana and I spoke at length before we started shooting about the importance of life and action being in the shot, even if nobody was in it. Like, you could tell it was, you know, you said it great, it was lived in. There was action behind whatever we were shooting.
Congratulations on it. I got to tell you, this is the rare baking book. I'm a little late to the game. Everyone else did their baking in March and April. I was slinging hash for the family, you know, a lot. We have two teenagers. I just was never seduced by that moment that everyone seemed to have back at the beginning of this mess. But But for pure pleasure, this, I'm telling you, I am, I have an electronic galley that was sent to me, but I'm going to pre-order this book, and I'm going to surprise my family with some baking. So thank you for that.
Sure.
And huge congratulations. I think it's just a home run, and I don't know you that well, but you know, we've seen each other a few times in the last 2 years. I'm very happy for you.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And that's our show for today. My great thanks to Kelly Fields for joining us. Please pick up or order her book, The Good Book of Southern Baking. Again, that is now available for purchase. Thank you to After School Special for their music. Please check out their album, Double Barrel, Single Entendre, on iTunes. You can follow us on Instagram. The handle there is @chefpodcast. And if you are so inclined, we always appreciate it if you would drop us a rating and especially a review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of Andrew Talks to Chefs.